I'm Diane Livingston, and I'm here with Rob Harder, a Park City, Utah resident. Hi, and founder and director of the Park City Christian Center. Today is November 11th, 2020. I've known Rob for a number of years, and it all started when my church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, helped in his Park City Christian Center Sub for Santa program. So
it's hard to believe. It was like 9 years ago, I want to say, and we got you on video though to prove it. So yeah, it's been fun.
It has been fun. That's such a great program. So we're getting together today over Zoom conferencing to record some of Rob's personal life experiences, as well as recording how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected him and his organization in the context of faith and worship. So before we get started, I need to ask Rob, may I have your consent to record this interview?
Yes, you do.
Thank you. So usually we begin by asking the narrator some questions about childhood and growing up, because 50 years from now, when people listen to this tape, they'll want to know who you are and where you're coming from, so to speak. So where you're born, what life was like for you growing up. Would you like to share maybe where you were born and any life experiences you'd like to put out there?
Yeah, sure. So I was born in Columbus, Indiana. It's a town just south of Indianapolis. If people have heard of Cummins Engine Company, that's their headquarters, among other things that happened there. And that's what brought my dad down there, my mom and dad. And because he worked for Cummins Engine Company, I was the youngest of five kids and grew up in a great home. That was one of those that really was I felt like very blessed to have a home where my parents loved me and I had a really good upbringing. I grew up in very much, and when it comes to faith, we grew up pretty much going to church from, you know, the very point I was born all the way, through high school. So it was just one of those things. It was part of our life. Now we did try a couple of different churches. So we're going to a Presbyterian church for a while. And then my parents shifted at around my fifth grade year, I want to say, to a Lutheran church. So we did switch from Presbyterian to Lutheran, but outside of that, church was always a part of my life, got involved with youth group right away. And again, it was just something that we talked about a lot. We prayed before meals. We prayed, as a family. So it was a big part of me growing up for sure.
Very cool. Did you have any hobbies that you liked when you were growing up?
Oh, definitely. One of the big things growing up was I love sports, so growing up, and I had three other brothers that were very competitive. We still are competitive to this day. So whether it be board games or sports or anything else, fantasy football, we're all very competitive. It's funny. So I loved all kinds, every kind of possible sport. So I ended up playing quite a bit, and I ended up playing all the way through college. I played basketball at college. But just that was certainly one of my main hobbies. But I also love music. I think all of us kids took some type of instrument. I learned to play piano initially when I was young, and then I moved into playing the double bass in orchestra and jazz. I did that up through high school, and I loved that. So I still love music to this day. So now I just play Spotify quite a bit. That's the way I, have my outlet. So those are probably my main hobbies. And then I got involved in, of course, church, a lot of leadership opportunities. So those are probably the main things as I think about, of course, academics were really important to us as well. So school was a big deal for us in terms of importance.
So was there any special little experience you can recall? You mentioned the youth groups. Is there something that you remember that you'd like to preserve here that meant something to you? Any little experience you could share?
That's a great question. I mean, I think, just kind of in general, I think the fact of growing up in a home where, our my brothers and one sister are still very close today. I think because we were so family oriented, when I think back in my family, so many things that kept us together, but one, I can share this, that I've tried to continue in my own family. One of the things that may seem a little corny, but we look back and it really was a special time. My parents were very much into having slideshows of the family pictures. My dad took a ton of pictures. And back then, I don't know if you remember the carousel where you put it in a little projector and then we had the screen and the pictures were these, little, you put the individual Kodachrome pictures into a slot, put in a carousel, and you'd have a slideshow, right? And so we would do that. And that was kind of a big family thing. So we'd do it, probably every other month, or maybe certainly every quarter, we just pull out and we'd do a family picture show. And it would just be a way to kind of tell our family story. We'd look at vacations, we'd look at fun activities, could be a sporting event that we took pictures of. And then there's always commentaries going on about what happened. And sometimes there was controversy, what really happened, or like my dad would have pictures of a certain golf course and like, no, this is hole number 8. No, it's hole number 6. And I got a par, or no, I got a birdie. So there's some controversy that would happen. So over the years, things maybe were not always as crystal clear as when we first took it. But I look back and I think of, throughout generations, people would pass on stories, right, among families. And I think that was kind of the way we did it, was through looking at pictures and then retelling the story, laughing about it. And so I've done that with my own family, where we switched to videos, of course, and now things online and on the computer. But same kind of thing, where it's just fun to look back and tell stories again and recognize the value that each person has and their unique role and funny things that have happened that brought us together as a family. So as I look back, I think that's one of the things that really just, I think, kept us close. And in a sense, we have an oral history, if you will, of our family, because we would do that on a regular basis. So anyway, that would be one thing I could share.
Oh, that's wonderful. What a great idea. I love that. Well, okay. So you're part of a family. You went away to college, I assume. Yeah, can you tell us just briefly about what that looked like for you?
Yeah. So I went to a school called Wheaton College in the Chicago area. So it was about 4 hours away from my hometown, and great school. It's a small liberal arts college. At the time, there was probably a little over 4,000 people part of the college. So it was, again, small, but it was a great size where I felt like you got to know your classmates and got to know your professors. I remember we would go to the professors' homes sometimes for dinner or meals or whatever. So I felt like it was a small school that you really got to have that personal connection, which now looking back, because I had a lot of my siblings and other friends that went to major universities that were much larger in size, they'd have 200 people in a class. And I think the largest class I ever had was maybe 80, 90 people in one class. So it was pretty unique and I really loved it. So yeah, moved to Chicago, went to school. And then ironically met my wife there in college. She was a year younger than me, but she was there also at Wheaton College. She was from the Denver area. And so we met at school and I ended up graduating, of course, and then I had a job right out of school working at a large church in Chicago called Willow Creek Community Church. I was an intern with their youth ministry and also did a side job just to make some money. And we continued dating. And then she graduated, then we ended up getting married and then we moved to Denver, and that kind of got us away from the Midwest. And so I've kind of been in the West ever since. I moved to Denver once we got married, and then I went to a school called Denver Seminary that's right there in Denver. And I never looked back, in a sense that I've visited, of course, but I've never lived again back in Indiana where I grew up.
All right. So what did you graduate from in college?
Yeah, so I had a double major. I was called a Christian education and then Bible degree or theology degree. So I had doubled up on those two. I knew at that point, once I went to my undergrad, certainly by my junior year, I thought, okay, I'm probably going to go into some kind of faith orientation of a job, whether it be a pastor or a school of some type that would have faith as a major component of that. And then once I graduated, I knew I was going to go to seminary. And so it really set me up well. And so that's why it was nice to have that Bible double major, because it prepared me. I took like things like Greek, I took Hebrew. And then actually when I went to seminary, I was able to test out in 1 year of Greek because I already had it in my undergraduate, which kind of saved me some time. And I love languages anyway. So it's kind of a fun thing to learn.
Very cool. Okay. And so then I'm assuming then you headed up to Park City at some point, which has brought you here.
Yeah. So to fast forward. So I was in Denver for all total about 16 years. And I was a pastor of various churches. And then fast forward to 2010, when I moved to Park City and I came for this job, the Christian Center of Park City. It's a non-denominational humanitarian organization. So it was different. It was not, I wasn't a pastor in a sense as my full-time job, even though I still wear the hat of pastor in many ways. And I'm a faith leader and I end up working with local churches. And a lot of the work is still ministry. You know, if you want to define ministry, ministry in that way. But overall, it's a nonprofit and it's not a church. We don't have, you know, it's not a denomination. We don't have church services. So it's very different than when I was the pastor of a local church, but I love it. It's been a really, really good fit. I've been here for 10 years and yeah, really the Christian Center started, even though the name sounds like a church, the goal really was to create a humanitarian community center that sought to meet the needs of this community, and particularly those needs that maybe fell through the cracks otherwise. People in this community that maybe would not be served, you know, other than having a humanitarian center that could really bring the resources together in this community to serve the needs of this community. And it was started in 2000, so we've actually been around for 20 years. And when they first came out in 2000, a little history real quick, Jim and Susan Swartz were second homeowners here in Park City, and they really saw this vision, like there needed to be a place, a humanitarian community center again, that really had as its main goal to serve the needs, particularly initially of the low-income community as it was growing, and to make sure that those needs were met. And then also this organization, the Christian Center, would be a catalyst to reach all the various churches and help bring them together to foster a sense of, hey, let's serve the entire community together. And the Christian Center could be that catalyst to provide, whether it be food or other ways of meeting the needs of this community. So that's how it started 20 years ago. The executive director that first came out was a guy named Tim Dahleen. He and his wife, Patty, he was the first executive director. She was the director of finance. They came together, started it kind of as a family mom and pop shop, if you will, you kind of compare it to that. And then their daughter, Tracy, came and ran the thrift store and the food pantry, kind of anything they needed right away. She's still with us to this day, 20 years later. She runs our Heber store for the thrift store there. Anyway, so it started that way as a humanitarian center. And then I came, as I mentioned, 10 years ago. And it's been fun to see it, Diane. You've seen the growth of this place. I came 10 years ago. We'd come, just had moved into a new building and we had about 9 paid staff. And lots of volunteers. But now looking back 10 years after the fact, we have 53 paid staff with over 1,000 volunteers on a given year. COVID obviously has been a little weird, a little different than normally, but that's what we normally have. And it's just been so fun to see it grow. Like we have a campus in Heber and we have a campus in Park City. We had this huge capital campaign, a $9.3 million capital campaign that we finished 2 years ago at our Park City campus. And then we have programs now that reach the entire state. You know, we're in Wendover and in the Ipabaw, Utah area, which is right on the border of Utah and Nevada, because we work with the Goshute Native American Reservation there. And we work with the indigenous group, the Navajo Nation, in the southwestern part of the state. In fact, I'll be taking turkeys in 2 weeks to the Utah Navajo community. And so we love really expanding a lot of the services and programs we've had here that started in Park City, but now we're reaching out to the entire state.
That's so amazing to see how it's grown. Really so amazing. What do you attribute that growth to, honestly? And we don't want to spend a lot of time on that, but I'm just so curious.
It's a good question. You know, as I look back, I think a combination of we had a great start. I thought our founders, number one, are super generous financially to help us get going. They invested in this organization to begin with. We have had great people. Tim and Patty Dahleen really set a great stage, if you will, for me to come in 10 years after the fact. They had a healthy organization. They got it off the ground because they came with nothing. You know, it was just an idea. And so they built it from scratch. And then we just really feel like the community's come alongside us because we've grown it. And really it's grown and grown the last 10 years. I think because the community has seen the needs, they've responded. I think we've got a great team. Again, we've hired more and more staff, and the staff together, this team has really come together to make sure people are aware of all the different services. And then as we've served and provided, like our food pantry is one of the largest now in the state, as we've continued to discovered that there is a much bigger need than people ever realized in Park City for food, just as one thing that we do. People got really excited about that. And they realized, yeah, let's make sure that there's no one that goes hungry here in Park City and Summit County. And then of course, we reached out to Heber. The reason we expanded into Heber was because we had people that worked in Park City, but lived in Heber. And so we thought, well, why don't we just provide services right there in Heber, as opposed to having to drive here. Now, a lot of them work, so they could do it, you know, while they're coming to work or going back home. But it just made sense because the needs there were quite high. In fact, maybe if this is important for the video, I could share that right now in the Park City School District, about 20% of the kids qualify for free and reduced lunch.
That's
so
amazing.
that's a federal standard of poverty that they come up with, and that's through the school. And so those are some of the families that we meet in terms of the needs that come up. And I think a lot of people outside of Park City are very shocked by that there's that much of people that fall into that category of need. Now, again, I could go to Salt Lake and the Granite School District, for example, and it's a much higher percentage, but I think it's just the mentality that, oh, Park City, everyone has money in Park City, there's no need there. That's just not the case. A lot of the people that keep the restaurants going and keep the resorts going and often have these one or two or sometimes three jobs are low income. They're heavily, the majority of the low income community here in Park City anyway, are from the Latinx community, not exclusively, but it's a large percentage. And then the Filipino community is a growing minority community here, and it's been fun to see them grow. So we end up serving a lot of them. Now we also serve people from the refugee community. Salt Lake, actually, over the years, again, it's changed just recently, but over the years has been one of the primary spots where refugees come from all over the world. And Salt Lake's been a very great city that welcomes them. And so Park City, because of all the resorts and the hotels and the restaurants, there's a lot of jobs. And so there's people that come up from Salt Lake every day to work at the restaurants and the hotels, but they're very typically low income. Now, some move up here, and even some that just work up here, they'll stop by the food pantry because they often have needs, or they'll have a need of clothes or household goods or furniture. And so those are the types of services we've seen that really have sought to meet people's needs. And then when the community hears what we're doing, they get super excited. And so they turn around and financially support us. They jump in as a volunteer, or like your church has been so great about jumping into our Operation Hope program and making sure kids have a great Christmas and things like that. So it's been really fun to see it grow.
Yes. That has been a really fun, such for Santa rolled into Operation Hope, and it's been really fun to be involved in that. Thank you, Rob. So just to back up for a second, you personally, your family, do you remain in the Lutheran faith?
Good question. So I don't, even though it was a great foundation and I enjoyed, like when I went to seminary, I really enjoyed delving into all kinds of different theology. When I was at Wheaton College for the most part is a non-denominational school now. They have people from all different backgrounds, Catholic, Lutheran, Pentecostal, Baptist, you name it. And so that was a very good experience in my mind, because then I got involved with a church called Willow Creek, as I mentioned, and that's a non-denominational church. They're not tied into a specific denomination, and really I've kind of carried that through my experiences. I would really say that's where I feel most comfortable, is a non-denominational community type of church. And so the way I describe it to people that are maybe unfamiliar with that is really I kind of focus on the essentials, or I feel like the non-denominational approach is more looking at what are those essentials of the Christian faith, and let's focus on those. And we may agree to disagree on things like baptism or communion or specific doctrinal issues, but we can agree on a lot of the general key doctrinal issues when it comes to Christianity as a whole. And so I've just felt the most comfortable in that setting. And it actually set me up well, because the Christian Center, as I mentioned before, we're non-denominational, or maybe a better word is an interdenominational, because again, we have people, as I look at Park City, we have people from all different denominations, the Episcopal Church and the Baptist Church and the Catholic Church, they all come and serve. And so we're open to everybody, and we love that. And we really, I feel like it helps for at least the Christian Center, the role that I have now, we're able to focus on the things we agree on, which honestly, we agree on so many more things than we disagree on. And sometimes we don't always emphasize that. But when we do, when we focus on the things we actually have agreement on, we can get a lot more accomplished, I found, and we can serve a lot of people doing it that way. So it's been just a good fit with, I guess, where I come theologically speaking, and how I end up working here at the executive director job here at the Christian Center.
That's great. So would that be Mountain Life that you go to?
I actually go to a church called Capital Church, and Capital here locally, they actually are based in Salt Lake, but they have a branch in Park City. And so, that's a Saturday night service here in Park City. And then their main service is on Sunday morning. They have actually, now COVID's changed everything, but before COVID, they had a Saturday night service and two Sunday morning services. And they have a building right next to Judge Memorial School down in Salt Lake. So that's been kind of a fun way to also stay connected to Salt Lake and the faith community down in Salt Lake through Capital Church.
Great. So that kind of opens up the question for me is what did pre-COVID worship look like? And then how did it change for you and your family?
Yeah. Oh, it's been just so strange. And I'm sure with all your interviews, it's been so different. But yeah, essentially, you know, when it first COVID first broke out, it was everything was online. So we just did everything online. And luckily we have computers and internet and that's been okay. Now, I don't like it. I like being with people. I like seeing people. I like connecting, you know, shaking hands and, you know, just, you know, being in a group, in a meeting room where there's a lot of people like that. I feed off of that. I just feel like that's the way we're wired too. So it's been hard. It's been an adjustment. So I would not say it's been great overall in a sense of I miss being in person with people. However, the one positive thing I would say is it for our family, it's been great because we ended up having Sunday mornings was what we decided to say, okay. Because often Saturday night before that, Saturday night was when we typically would go to church because that was when Park City had their capital service here. So Sunday mornings were kind of nice because it turned into a family day because we went to church on Saturday night. But now we said, it was Sunday mornings. So we made Sunday mornings our family day. So we'd have breakfast together and we'd watch church online and then we'd talk about it. And then we just have this, you know, we'd have a prayer time together. And it was really fun. In fact, it got to the point where we were doing it week after week after week. And our kids really loved it. I was kind of surprised because, you know, kids are kids, even though for the most part, they're great kids. But, you know, when I was a kid and a high schooler, I wasn't super excited about, I wouldn't be super excited about sitting down and watching something on the TV screen. But my kids have really enjoyed it. I think it's because we have had it just made it a special thing. We make breakfast together and they can choose what we make and we all kind of do a different part. And sometimes it's pancakes, sometimes it's eggs or whatever. But we all make it together and we end up just making a special time together. So as I look back, that's probably one of the more positive things of COVID is that I think we have had more family time because our kids are very busy and they're active in all kinds of different things and they scatter, right? And we're often driving them all over this region of whether it be going to basketball games or choir concerts or violin concerts to whatever. And that all was shut down. So we ended up having more time as a family and more time together. And that's been probably one of the more positive things.
That's wonderful. How old are your kids right now?
So yeah, so now we've got actually a junior in college. So, and she came back, she was going to a school in California. And right before COVID actually was breaking out, she was already thinking about maybe transferring to the University of Utah, but COVID kind of can, you know, just was like the final nail in the coffin, so to speak. And so she chose to come back home. So she's with us now, even though she's a junior in college and she's going online, but she's at the University of Utah. There actually is one class that's online, or sorry, in person. And then the rest is online. So it's a hybrid approach. And then I have a senior in high school and I have a freshman in high school.
Okay, so you are right in the middle of it.
It's really fun. I got three girls and they're super fun to be with.
What are their names? What are their names?
Yeah, so Emma is my oldest, Elise is my middle, and Evie is my youngest.
Okay, cute. Very cute. All right, so now you're back to, okay, so you came home. Are you still home streaming or have you guys gone back to services?
Yeah, good question. So we did actually, they've had now a couple of in-person services, socially distanced and mask wearing and all that. But we did, ironically, and then the governor just came out, of course, with the new kind of, I know faith communities are supposedly exempt, but our church decided to go back to an online starting this Sunday. So we had what I think about a month's worth of in-person. And now we're going back to online, which is unfortunate. Now we're just going to do it for the first 2 weeks. I think that's what Governor Herbert had mentioned. It was just through the 23rd. So I think at this point, the church has said, let's try the next 2 weeks online. And then hopefully we can go back to in-person services. And now it's better than nothing. You know, when we've gone to service the last couple of weeks, it's been socially distanced. So it's a little odd, right? But it's something. Like we're together, we can see each other. We've got masks on, of course, we can sing. And it's just fun to finally see, you know, someone, even if it's across the room or just look at their eyes with their masks on, but it's been nice. So it's a little bit of a bummer. I understand why we're doing it, but I'm hoping that we'll be able to get back into in-person services soon.
Yeah. Do you guys in your church, do you have some sort of Eucharist or sacrament?
Yeah, we do. Yes. Yeah. So, yep. This particular church, they offer what we call communion. Yeah. So the Eucharist once a month. Mm-hmm. Now it's funny. We have not done Eucharist yet or communion since we've been back in person. So that is really difficult, right? Because Now they've done it online and they've encouraged, you know, families to do it on their own, you know. And so we've done that a couple of times over the summer, you know, where they led online and, you know, they walked through the same terminology and walked through the communion elements. And then we were supposed to take care of the elements on our end. And so for our tradition, we would have like grape juice, for example. And so we just had grape juice and we had bread. And so we did it just as a family. So that was kind of fun. And actually that was kind of special. I kind of envisioned, you know, that first church, you know, having similar things where it was a family where they broke bread together. And maybe it was just two or three families together, house to house doing it. And so we kind of had that experience now. So yeah, we have not done it in person and I'm not sure how that's going to work, to be honest with you, because I know there's, again, a little bit of health issue. We have to be super careful, but anyway, so that's how we've done it so far.
Interesting. Yeah. It sounds like it was kind of a special experience for you as a family.
The family was kind of fun. Yeah, it actually was pretty fun.
We did the same and it was fun. It was fun to do it just as a family. So unique. So unique.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, here's the question. So I wonder if you feel like it was, it sounds like it wasn't for you. Was it hard at all to go back? Once you heard, oh, it's lifted, had you found yourselves really comfortable being at home and it was a little hard to pry yourself out of the house? Or what, I'm curious if you had any of those feelings. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. So the organization, the Christian Center course that I lead, we are an essential service. And so we actually never shut down. So we kept our food pantry going the whole time during COVID. So we've never closed our doors. We did move our basic needs online. So in other words, that's basic needs is where we help with people's rent or utility bills or a medical bill they couldn't afford or things like that. So we were able to do that all through online giving and connection. And then our mental health counseling for about almost 2 months was telehealth, but then we moved to in-person because we had such an issue, which maybe we want to talk about, just the suicide ideation, the depression, the anxiety was really, really, it's still very, very intense. So probably more than any service we provided outside of a rent assistance, I guess, mental health has been really, really important. But anyway, back to your question. So we never shut down. So I was still going to the office. Now we did modify our schedule and our food pantry was, a drive-through system. It was by reservation only. We didn't have personal interaction. We would literally have the way our setup is, we also are a place where, like the DI or the Goodwill, we're a donation center. So people would donate, you know, household goods, clothes and whatnot. Well, we shut that down during COVID for a period of time. We turned that drive-through system though into our food pantry. So it was a mobile food pantry essentially. And we set everything outside. And so we got the food together, put it in boxes and then set it aside for each family as they would come by. And then we would, you know, walk away, make sure we had a safe distance away. They'd grab the box, put it in their car and leave. So there wasn't interaction. There wasn't, you know, we had the health department actually come through and give us guidelines of how to do this safely, but we kept it going the whole time. So all to say, we were not at home that much. We pretty much were here. Now, again, we did a lot of Zoom meetings for sure. And a lot of our interactions with people were on Zoom. And so coming back into person, actually, I liked it because, again, I'm an extrovert. I like being with people. So that was something I was looking forward to. But because we kind of were already in the office pretty much every day, it wasn't that unusual. Now, having said that, it was interesting you ask it because I did notice a lot of other nonprofit leaders, a lot of volunteers. That was a really hard jump to like come to our campus and start volunteering in the food pantry again. And people that we did shut down our stores, by the way, we have three thrift stores and we did shut those down during a period of time during COVID. And then we shifted those staff to help with our food pantry during that time. But then when we moved them back, we had to make sure we were really careful. You know, we were one of the first ones right away. I mean, in Summit County for the state, right? We were still like having masks right away. We never really were at a place where masks weren't being encouraged to wear, if not mandated. So we've had masks the whole time. We've got this protocol down. Again, the health department gave us protocols to wipe down high touch surfaces. We were, you know, hand sanitizer everywhere. We limited our hours. So there was a lot of things we put into place to make sure that our staff felt comfortable and they kept safe. And then that our volunteers were comfortable and safe as well coming, as well as, of course, the customers that came through. And so I would say the last 3 months, almost 4 months now, before Governor Herber's like most recent, mandate, we've been pretty, I'd say almost normal. Again, everything's with masks and hand sanitizer. I think our hands are raw now from how much sanitizer we put on our hands, but we've been able to function somewhat normally, if you will, I'd say now for about 4 months. And so it feels very normal. So hopefully that answers your question.
That's good. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, so I'm kind of wondering about the people that you serve.
Yeah.
And you kind of alluded to it a little bit. What are some of the struggles that you feel like COVID has? I mean, you deal mostly with the physical, I feel like it sounds like, but you also have those emotional needs that you fill. And it seems like you are also filling some faith needs, you know? And so with this interview, all three of those are interesting. I would ask first though about the faith needs. Have you seen people struggle with their faith during this time, or, you know, or has it helped with their faith? I'm kind of curious what you've seen.
Boy, that's a really good question. And I would say in general, I do think this has been overall a very challenging time for people of faith or people that have a faith community, mostly because of what we talked about earlier. You know, we couldn't gather together in public with each other. And I think a lot of people really, you know, that's a really important part of their faith is gathering together weekly, if not more, you know, throughout the week. We didn't have that opportunity. Now, funny enough, having said that, there, you know, I think the introverts of the world really enjoyed this. They're like, hey, this is fantastic. I don't have to go outside. I could still have my church online. So I wouldn't say that's for everybody, but I think in general, I guess I heard more people really struggling to stay engaged with their faith, to stay plugged in, to feel like they were connecting with other people, which again is a big part of their faith. I think the other piece that made it difficult that did bleed into people's faith is the people that we're serving, you know, it has been really challenging. Like the number one, just the fear of getting COVID. I think early on, people were just really afraid, like, I'm not ready to die. You know, I don't want to get this disease. And so I think it created a tremendous amount of anxiety. And so I think for those who didn't have maybe a regular faith community or resources in their life that gave them support and encouragement when it came to faith, then it was difficult to kind of work through that anxiety, that fear of getting the disease, the fear of having people over, or then also the fear of maybe passing it on to parents that are elderly and not being able to see them. That made it difficult. So I think it made all the relationships very challenging. And so I think that made, I think, things very difficult. Now, on the positive side, again, I think it's been a mixture of both, I guess, to answer your question. The positive side, there's been more resources out there than ever that are online that people can access on their computer or on their phone. You know, there's been services you could, you know, on a Sunday morning or anytime, actually, any time of the day, you could dial in and listen to services and sermons and messages from a whole variety of different faith backgrounds and denominations. I mean, different speakers from all over the country, all over the world. So I think in that sense, if you kind of had your standard, you go to church around the corner in your community, now you've been opened up to an opportunity where you've got resources from all over the place that really, I think, could be a real benefit. So as long as you were taking advantage of those and knew where to go to get those resources, I think that's been a positive for people faith-wise. And now to kind of go into like the mental health and the physical, I think certainly the first 6 months of this, our biggest need was food and rent assistance. So here in Park City anyway, and Wasatch County, Heber, we were able to we've given almost $1 million worth of rent assistance since this pandemic started. And I think there's going to be more need for this, say in January and February. There's a moratorium right now, of course, nationwide by the CDC has said you can't evict somebody for non-payment. That ends right now at the end of December. So there is some fear that at the end of December, if that's not extended, which right now it's not been extended, that right in the middle of the winter, people potentially could be evicted. I mean, I'm really, really hopeful. I guess I'm always looking at the bright side that I can't imagine that we would allow people to be evicted right in the middle of the winter across the country, that this has to be extended into at least for another 6 months. That's my hope anyway. But in the meantime, you know, people have had a little bit of a reprieve in that no one is being evicted right now. Now, having said that, it's not a rent forgiveness, though. This is a rent moratorium or an eviction moratorium. So people still have to pay the rent. So we still are helping people because they're still, they've gotten behind. A lot of them have not gotten back to 40 hours of work. So they still can't pay all their bills. So we've had, for example, we've had a lot of people come to us with a bill of $3,000 because they've gotten in a hole and they're not working full-time hours. They're working as many hours as they'll give them. But around Park City, again, hotels are not open fully. The resorts are just going to, they're going to start opening one in a couple of weeks, but not fully again. It's going to be more scaled back. Restaurants are scaled back. Dine-in is not often available. It's only drive-through. Things like that has impacted our working class here, and therefore they don't have the money that they used to have. So we're still helping. So that's been a big, big need, is just helping physically with people with the rent assistance. And then of course, food. Food, we've had plenty of food to give. That's one positive thing, is we've had plenty of food. That's not been an issue. And people have taken advantage of that in a good way. Like, they've come to our food pantry. We were serving 1,000 people a week at the height of COVID. So there's been, yeah, so between Wasatch and Summit County, we've been serving a lot of people. And then finally, you touched on it. I think the biggest need that every time I've been on a Zoom call recently, I just to mention it over and over again, because it's such a big need. And I don't know why it's not talked about a lot on a national scale. Every now and then I'll hear about it, but I would not say it's been the number one thing that people have talked about. Now, maybe in our country, because the politics have been the front and center for everybody because of the election, but the mental health needs of our community and our, I'd say our country, I think are something we'd have to really continue to look at, because we've had rates so far, they've seen a higher rate of suicide in a short period of time than ever, that the, you know, in recent memory, there's been higher rates of people just with anxiety and depression, again, tied with maybe they had the ability to meet with a psychiatrist or a counselor, but now they can't because they can't afford it, or their insurance went away, or because of COVID, they're only doing telehealth, so they can't see somebody in person, so that it doesn't have the same impact when they meet with the counselor. And so all of that has impacted people's mental health. And if you've lost your job, say you've lost somebody to COVID, you know, you've lost a loved one, and you're isolated a lot in your own house, maybe. Some, sadly, a lot of homes, there's abuse going on in homes. I mean, there's just a whole series of things that are going on that we don't often talk about. And it all is in the area of emotional and mental health. And I think that's still a real area that we need lots of emphasis on, and more counselors out there, more, just remove the stigma from having ever, if people have a stigma of going to a counselor, this is the time, I hope, is it's wiped away, because counselors are available. Psychiatrists are available. There's people to talk to. There's hotlines out there, suicide hotlines. And I just encourage people to do that, because I think people of faith in particular, sometimes we think, wow, if we just pray hard enough, or if I just go to church, or if I surround myself with people of faith, all those are good things. All those are really important. But there are times where, in addition, even if you have those things in your life, I still think there's a great need for counseling in your life. Sometimes people just need medication management. They need medication to help manage schizophrenia. And they're, you know, maybe that's an issue, or major depression, where they do need some help to have someone give them some medicine that they can really manage that for them, because it's a physiological issue that they're dealing with. It's not really a faith issue. It's not a lack of faith, in other words, why they're having depression. It's because physiologically they're experiencing depression. So there's so many tools out there. I just hope people know that there's resources that are compatible with faith. It's a both and, right? It's not either or. And so that's one of my big messages that I've passed on, is that this is a great time to combine faith with all these other good resources that can help you emotionally and mentally.
Yeah, I think for me, one of the biggest concerns I've had is the abuse, that I know that abuse, yes, is a big issue, and to have all the children home all the time and parents really stressed, yep, or working. So I mean, are you personally seeing that has become more of a problem here in the Park City area?
Sadly, it has. We work very close with Peace House. It's another nonprofit that works with domestic violence, and that has been a big issue. And here's what's challenging. Here's just a couple of scenarios. So say it's telehealth now, where you can only talk to your counselor through online. Well, if your abuser is in the same home, how do you get away from them to have a conversation about the situation? So it's made it very difficult. A lot of people have had to kind of go underground, so to speak. And then secondly, because of COVID, it's made the options of leaving and going somewhere else much more difficult. And then third is just normal people that are just, you know, trying to make it day by day, that maybe has not dealt with mental health issues because of isolation, because of maybe losing a job, because of the financial pressures and the unknown and the uncertainty of how long are we going to be in this COVID, you know, pandemic, all that's created issues for just, I would say, people that normally don't deal with mental health, but the people that have had mental health issues or underlying mental health issues, and then all the COVID and all the isolation, all the other issues has caused those issues to go to a whole nother degree of severity. And so therefore, if domestic violence was an issue or abuse was an issue, it's gotten worse. And so, yes, we've seen it. Our counselors have seen it. It's super sad. And that's why, again, I just mentioned, please reach out. There are a lot of resources out there. I'm thankful for that. But yeah, here in the Park City area, the Wasatch Community area, the Salt Lake area, please just reach out, because there are areas. Now, I think, at least in the Park City area, I could speak to most of the faith leaders in this community do have accessibility and resources available. So like if you contact your pastor or your priest or your bishop, they should have resources available for you if you need mental health or certainly for food and different things like that. So I do think there's people are informed in this area. I don't know about throughout the state, but I do know for Park City and Wasatch Community that people seem to be very informed. And so if you are struggling and for some reason you're watching this video or you know people, there are resources out there, and your faith leader should have access to those resources to pass on to you.
Thank you so much, Rob. Such great, great thoughts.
Yeah, you bet.
Here's another question as we wrap up here. What is there anything that has surprised you with respect to COVID that you know, when you think about what's happened, is religious or otherwise, is there anything that surprised you that you didn't expect would happen during this time?
Yeah, I like that question, surprise. I'll say personally a little bit, and then maybe just my reflections, you know, globally, I guess. I've been surprised personally, again, how much for our family, in a way, it's actually been a benefit because we've spent so much time together. It's really kind of forced us to be together. And that's a positive thing for our family. It's been really a unique treat and kind of surprising how much we've really just enjoyed spending time together. And even as things kind of opened up over the summer, we're like, hey, we really enjoy actually still hanging out together. And I'm so glad as a parent that my kids actually want to hang out with us still. That may not last, but right now they still like hanging out with us. Now on maybe the negative side, I think what's been challenging has been, I think all of us have, you know, experienced this, where this has been the most impactful holistically pandemic we've ever experienced, in terms of it's impacted everything. It's impacted our jobs. It's impacted social life. It's impacted the faith community. It's impacted, you know, our ability to get food to people. It's impacted relationships. It's impacted abuse situations. I mean, it's impacted every aspect of life. So I kind of think, you know, people that usually depended on whatever they depended on, maybe family or their faith or their job or their relationships or whatever it was, it feels like everything's been pulled out from under you. And I think what's been challenging too is that there's not a solid, like, okay, well, it's all going to end on January 1st and we can all go back to normal. And I think, you know, humans were wired to have the sense, okay, I can get through kind of anything almost, as long as I know there's an end date.
Yeah.
As long as I know when it's going to be all done and I have closure, okay, I'll suck it up for another 2 months, but boy, January 1st, I can't wait to get back to normal. And I think the sense that we don't have closure, or we don't have a sense of when this is going to be over, when are we going to go back to normal? That's still up in the air. And I think, I don't know, I guess I've reflected on, as human beings, I just don't think we do really well with that level of uncertainty. It's really challenging to know how to live our lives with so much uncertainty. And so I do think faith can be a wonderful grounding thing, that faith can make the uncertainty a little bit better and more manageable, because at least you have this internal certainty of your faith and your connection with God and your sense of centeredness. So I do think that's a positive, that faith comes into the situation. Like if you're a person that doesn't have faith, I think it's even more difficult, because I don't know where you find your groundedness or your centeredness. But even for people of faith, I think this uncertainty and lack of closure and lack of end in sight is really difficult. And I guess I've been surprised how much it's impacted me, but so many people I've talked to, same thing, like, can we just go back to normal? You know, can we go back to where it used to be? And right now we can't, and we don't know when we can. So that's a real challenging thing. So,
yeah, I would echo that. Definitely. You just want to go back to normal. And what is normal anymore? It feels like.
Then that's the concern, is like, is there ever a normal again? And now the fear is, oh my goodness, no. And there's almost like a panic that comes in, like, well, what does that mean? Like, you know, anyway. Yeah,
forever.
Right. That's what it kind of feels like. Yeah.
I know. Well, do you think that there are any permanent changes that you've seen? Just a couple more questions. Maybe. Yeah. Do you think there's any changes that you have seen that you want to keep permanent in your life or with your organization?
Like, yeah, I think I've loved, again, I go back to the same, I feel like a broken record, but I think going back to this real emphasis of the family, again, I know there's families that are not feeling they're dysfunctional. And so I'm careful to say that. I know not every family feels closeness and safe when they're at home, but for those who have a safe home and, you know, a functional home, it's been wonderful. And I hope, like for our family, I hope we never lose that sense of, that's really important. That I know before COVID, we were very busy. I mean, we're a busy family. We've just got a million things going on. My wife runs the counseling center. I run the Christian center. You know, we have a lot going on. I mean, our days are very full. And I look back when everything kind of shut down, even though we stayed open, but we weren't as busy because the kids didn't have activities. They weren't running around to, you know, school activities, or we weren't traveling as much. And so that busyness factor, what I would not want to go back to is that level of busyness. So I think eliminating things that maybe pulled us away as a family, or pulled us away from friendships, pulled us away from relationships, even my wife and I just having more time together as a married couple. Like, I don't want to go back to that crazy busy time where we just didn't have as much time together, where we were just kind of passing the night and, you know, texting occasionally, but not really having quality family time, quality relationship time, quality friendship time. That I hope we never go back to. So I think that's been a good thing. And I think then in terms of maybe as a whole, the faith community, I hope we never lose that sense of when we went back, when we finally opened back up and we actually had services, people were so excited to see each other. Like, I hope we never lose that sense of excitement of seeing each other. And maybe something's taken away from you, you realize how much value it has in your life. So I hope we never lose that sense of value of faith, our churches, our families, our friendships. I think that made it very special. So I hope we don't lose that.
Yeah, I agree. Are there any other thoughts that you have, or maybe you could share hopes that you have for the future, either personally or with your organization?
I'm super thankful for. I feel like then another thing that I hope we don't lose, and I don't think we will, but the community here in Park City, and again, I'd say Wasatch and Summit County, this whole region, people really responded to the need. I mean, the reason we were able to give $1 million worth of rent assistance is because people gave us money, you know, that we turned around. We didn't have that kind of budget. So that all came from community support. So I just thank the community for that support. So I hope we don't lose that. And I hope that people continue to not go back to normal of if they're, you know, I think people now are aware that there's a lot of disparities in our culture and a lot of disparities in our community, that there's not always people that, you know, have margin in their finances, or they don't have access to the same resources that maybe some other people do, whether it be educational resources or job resources. So I think the sense of let's do this together, let's not lose that community aspect, that together we can do a lot more, and let's make sure, particularly for the most vulnerable in our communities, to rally around them and make sure no one falls through the cracks. I think that's a good thing that I hope we continue. And I think as a Christian center, you know, that's actually, as we look into this next year, we're going to, as we've grown and want to add more staff, we're adding more staff in the mental health counseling, and we're adding more in the area of empowering people by helping them navigate through all the resources that are available. And one of the big ones is job training, really giving people more skills so they can expand their job opportunities. Because I think there's having a job and a good paying job is so important for people's self-worth, the sense of self, just feeling good about themselves. And of course, economically, they need jobs to, you know, pay the bills. And so providing more job training, maybe it's education, maybe it's English training, whatever it is to help people expand themselves and have better jobs, better paying jobs. I think all that's going to benefit everybody in our culture and our community. And so we're going to invest in some more job training and providing people that maybe have expertise in entrepreneurial skills. And then, you know, Diana, you and I have been talking about how do we help people manage their budget and do some financial planning. Those kinds of skills, I think, become so important. And I think that's going to have a long-term impact on these families, particularly that struggle with, you know, making ends meet day in and day out.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is very important to help people to see how they can figure out how to be self-reliant. And yeah. I mean, your job probably is to try and work your way out of a job in a way, you know?
That's right. Exactly. We don't want them to just keep coming to the food pantry forever. Right. It's just during an emergency. That's right. Self-reliance is a real big goal. That's right.
Okay. That kind of concludes my questions. This has been so wonderful. And you and your organization are so highly respected in our community. And I just want to thank you personally for all the work that you've done.
Oh, thank you, Diane. Really appreciate it.
You are a tireless leader and people really respect you. I know that those who work with you in the Interfaith Council always speak of the good that you're doing. And we really do need you. And we love working with you too. Thank you.
You're very kind. Thank you. I feel your support, you and Lance, that your church, I mean, have been amazing. So I just want to say right back at you, thank you for your support. It feels good to be supported. That gives us that encouragement and inspiration to keep serving the many needs that we see. So thank you. It takes a community.
It does. So I'm going to speak with Lance for Lance and myself that we wish you the very best going forward and in everything you're doing. And thank you very much for your time today, Rob.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for great questions. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to stop.
All right, Dana. You better.